During an unannounced visit to Kyiv, U.S. President Joe Biden praised Ukrainian resiliency.
You know, 1 year later, Kyiv stands, and Ukraine stands, democracy stands, the Americans stand with you, and the world stands with you.
The visit comes as the United States announces additional military aid for Ukraine.
It will include HIMARS, ammunition, anti-tank systems, and radars. And he also confirmed that this week the U.S. Will introduce new sanctions against Russia.
And later in the program, a lifelong humanitarian reflects on her first visit to Ukraine after the end of the Cold War. Today is Monday, February 20th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. President Joe Biden made an unannounced visit to Ukraine on Monday to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky, a gesture of solidarity that comes days before the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion of the country. The visit comes at a crucial moment in the war as Biden looks to keep allies unified in their support for Ukraine as the war is expected to intensify with both sides preparing for spring offenses. Zelensky is pressing allies to speed up delivery of pledged weapon systems and is calling on the West to deliver fighter jets to Ukraine, something that Biden has so far declined to do. As the anniversary of the invasion nears, Zelensky prods the U.S. and European allies to provide even more advanced weaponry and to step up the pace of delivery. For Zelensky, having the U.S. president stand side by side with him on Ukrainian soil in Mariinsky Palace was a symbolic triumph.
Morning to everybody. Today we host President Biden. That is so important signal for us. And all we are proud of it. Thank you very much for coming, Mr. President. That is a huge moment of supporting of the Ukraine. And what can I say? I really appreciate that President Biden, American society, being from the very beginning of this tragedy, from the very beginning of this full-scale war, from the first days being together with us, first phone call of supporting was from White House to Ukraine. And thank you for your leadership. Thanks bipartisan support. Thanks Congress. I think that is historical moment for our country and very important. Today we'll speak detail about the situation on the battlefield. But I think almost we'll speak about people, about Ukrainians, about Americans. I think that is huge and so difficult period for societies and what we have to do to stop the war, to have success in this war, to make Ukraine more stronger, and how to win this year. You're very welcome, Mr. President.
If the timing is crucial for Zelensky, it's also crucial for Biden. As election season at home begins, he's hoping that U.S. and worldwide support for Ukraine can put a swift end to the war, rather than dragging out the fighting into an extended stalemate, or worse, an escalation with Russia.
1 year ago this week that we spoke on the telephone, Mr. President, it was very late at night in Washington, very early in the morning here in Kyiv. Russian planes were in the air and tanks were rolling across your border. You told me that you could hear the explosions in the background. I'll never forget that. And the world was about to change. I remember it vividly. Because I asked you, what is there, Mr. President? What can I do for you? How can I be of help? And I don't know if you remember what you said to me, but you said, and I quote, "Gather the leaders of the world, ask them to support Ukraine." And you said that you didn't know when we'd be able to speak again. That dark night, 1 year ago, the world was literally at the time bracing for the fall of Kyiv. Seems like a lot longer ago than a year, but think back to that year. Perhaps even the end of Ukraine. You know, 1 year later, Kyiv stands, and Ukraine stands. Democracy stands. The Americans stand with you, and the world stands with you.
In Kyiv, Biden announced an additional $500 million in U.S. assistance, on top of the more than $50 billion already provided, including shells for howitzers, anti-tank missiles, radars, and other aid, but no new advanced weaponry. Biden's mission with his visit to Kyiv, which came ahead of a scheduled trip to Warsaw, Poland, is to underscore that the United States is prepared to stick with Ukraine as long as it takes to repel Russian forces, even as public opinion polling suggests that U.S. and allied support for providing weaponry and direct economic assistance has started to soften. We'll find out about Joe Biden's scheduled trip to Warsaw in a few minutes. First, though, more on his unannounced trip to Kyiv with our reporter in Kyiv, Anna Chernikova.
Yeah, I should say that it was one of the most exciting days in this past year for Ukraine, to be honest, because, well, it was an absolute surprise visit. Of course, you know, there were talks within the society and people were discussing that actually when Biden confirmed his trip to Poland, that it would have been so cool and so nice if he would also visit Kyiv. But no one expected that because everyone understands that, you know, the amount of risk, especially for the president of the U.S. to come to Kyiv at this point of time. But today in the morning, you know, the city woke up and the whole country, I should say, but the city of Kyiv itself especially woke up with this, you know, very special feeling in the air that something very important should happen. There were some, you know, also talks starting from the morning that someone very important might come because the city of Kyiv was full with security and was full with military security. This was something that even for Kyiv, it was too much military security around. And also some of the central streets were closed for traffic. So this was, you know, this feeling that actually, you know, something is coming. And also in the morning, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, announced that he is canceling his visit to Brussels, where the meeting with a European foreign minister was planned. And at this point, it was quite clear that someone very big is coming. And so at 11:30 a.m. local time, the first images of Biden and Zelensky appeared. And at 11:34, air raid siren was on in Kyiv. So it was, you know, this kind of very, you know, exciting morning. So morning full of excitement and full of certain, you know, expectation of something that something might come.
So there were air raid sirens while Biden was in town. Were there any attacks?
There were no attacks, but it was a siren, and the siren started as soon as this, you know, first images of President Biden and President Zelensky at the St. Michael's Square appeared. So, but I should say that both presidents did not really pay much attention to the siren. They just continued to walk to their destination, and it didn't really change their plans. So they just moved on with the schedule.
How is the ordinary Ukrainian citizen feeling about having Joe Biden in town?
So definitely Ukrainians were very excited about the confirmation of this, you know, of this event happening. And when this first footage of President Biden in Kyiv appeared, it was really, you know, full of excitement within the society. People, even those people who are not you know, very much into the serious politics or do not really, you know, follow all the news. Of course, everyone were into this news and were following what President Biden was about to say.
And we know that he announced an additional $500 million of aid. Do you know what that aid is for, how it's going to be used?
Yes, actually, President Biden confirmed that half a billion military aid package for Ukraine is on the way. And he mentioned that it will include HIMARS, ammunition, anti-tank systems, and radars. And he also confirmed that this week the U.S. will introduce new sanctions against Russia. And also President Zelensky, during the press conference, mentioned that the result of today's meeting, definitely historic meeting and historic visit, will be reflected on the battlefield. And this creates, you know, this additional assurance within the society, especially that probably, you know, something even more would be provided for Ukraine, not only what was announced publicly.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll hear from the chair of the board of Human Rights Watch in a few moments about her book and what she's learned traveling to places as far-flung as Yugoslavia, Rwanda, Vietnam, and Ukraine. First, President Joe Biden is gearing up to mark the anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine with a speech in neighboring Poland on Tuesday, where he'll reiterate the U.S. commitment to support the defense of Ukraine for as long as it takes. This despite growing Republican reticence and softening of overall public support among Americans. White House bureau chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has this look ahead.
Amid the Russian offensive in Ukraine, U.S. President Joe Biden will mark the one-year anniversary of the war with a speech in neighboring Poland on Tuesday, said John Kirby, National Security Council spokesperson.
President Biden will make it clear that the United States will continue to stand with Ukraine, as you've heard him say many times, for as long as it takes. And on Wednesday, President Biden will give a chance to meet with the leaders of the Bucharest Nine, otherwise known as the B9.
Observers say Moscow is turning the conflict into a war of attrition in a bid to grind down Ukrainian resolve and exhaust the West's patience. Ukraine has the advantage of Western high-tech weapons, but Russia benefits from the sheer size of its economy, manpower, and defense production capacity. George Beebe, director of grand strategy at the Quincy Institute, via Skype.
We are trying essentially to achieve a balance here, to give the Ukrainians enough military wherewithal that they can bring this war to a successful conclusion, but to do so without recklessly raising the risks of World War III, as President Biden is fond of saying. And that's not an easy balance to strike.
While there is still broad support for Ukraine in Congress, some Republican lawmakers in the House of Representatives, whose party now holds a slim majority, are questioning the massive flow of American funds to Kyiv, $40 billion in security, economic, and humanitarian aid since the invasion. Ryan Zinke, a Republican congressman from Montana, spoke to VOA earlier this month.
This war is being fought in the backs of U.S. taxpayers. And what's our plan, Mr. President? Is it an endless war? Are we going to continue to feed armament that we don't know where it's going exactly or how it's going to be used, to what extent?
Polls show nearly half of Americans now say Washington should urge Kyiv to settle for peace as soon as possible. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Millions of Ukrainians fled into Poland in the first months of Russia's invasion. A year on, the chaotic scenes at the border have eased, and many Ukrainians now cross back and forth from their home country. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Poland is braced for a new influx of refugees as the fighting intensifies in eastern Ukraine.
Olga Schust is returning to Ukraine. She works in Poland, but goes back to look after her parents, who are too old to escape the war. 12 months of fighting have taken a psychological toll. How can you kill other people like that, Schust said. The 21st century, everything is moving forward, and here is such despair. People at my age have their lives laid out, they have plans for the future, and it's all destroyed. The Polish border city of Przemyśl is a hub for Ukrainian refugees. Charlotte Farrar came here from the United States as a volunteer. She has noticed an uptick in new arrivals.
either people feeling afraid of what's to come or sort of having the gravity of what's been happening for the past year hit them all over again as they've been struggling through the winter without electricity, heating, clean water, and so on.
In the first weeks of the war last year, tens of thousands of Ukrainians poured into Przemyśl every day, cramming into trains that carried them across the frontier. Many had spent days on the road with little food, drink, or shelter.
The panic and chaos that filled these platforms in the early days of Russia's invasion have subsided. But 12 months on, the stories of loss and separation are no less harrowing.
It is now two-way traffic. Many Ukrainians pass through Przemyśl on their way back home. Among them are Anna Fedorova and her two children, who are returning home to Zaporizhia in Ukraine, close to the front line. Husband Andrei is staying in Poland, where he works as a driver. The family has spent a week together and won't meet again for a month. Anna told VOA, "The war is close by, but I still want to go home." The children, for a while, were very worried, very afraid. But then, I guess everyone just got used to it, you know. Even when you walk and feel the explosions, somehow it is accepted more calmly. Taisha and her daughter Juliana arrived from Kyiv. After a year of traveling back and forth, she is learning to cope with the war. I'm stronger, Taisha said, and it's not so scary anymore. And there is hope that everything will end soon. There was so much unknown. It was unclear when and how. It seemed that nothing would work anymore. But we continue to live, to work. We continue to move. There is hope that everything will be fine soon. Hope in the face of hardship. The early fears that Ukraine would fall to Russia's invasion are gone, replaced by a stoic determination. But the goodbyes don't get any easier. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, Przemyśl on the Poland-Ukraine border.
Well before Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 and launched its war of aggression nearly a year ago, Jane Olson had been active in providing humanitarian assistance to those in need around the globe. In her memoir, World Citizen, Journeys of a Humanitarian, Olson shares what she's learned from her travels. VOA's Steve Miller spoke with her.
We went down from Kyiv to Odessa, stopped at all of the port cities along the way. That whole region between Kyiv and Odessa had been closed off to the outside world because it was a major center of weapons production, military weapons production, but also nuclear weapons production. So people who lived in those cities had been closed cities. People who lived there were not allowed to leave, and even Soviet citizens were not allowed to visit there unless they had, you know, business or military connections or whatever. But when we got to the first port city, I was very nervous about what I was going to find because I know that the Soviet Union had put out so much negative propaganda about these horrible Americans that, I don't know, we had horns and we ate our children or whatever they said about us. And when we came off the boat onto the dock at every city, we were greeted with such a celebration, you know, such a festive air. People were dressed in native costumes. There were dancers handing out flowers, that beautiful braided bread that they're known for. The men did Cossack dances for us. It was a party. They were so thrilled to see us. And by the time we got to Odessa, I just felt so at home, and I was actually invited to join a group of teenagers in Odessa, teenage Ukrainians, and so they took me around the city and into their apartments, and they called me Mother Goose because I handed out Christmas cards of my family that were Mother Goose nursery rhymes, and I adopted these teenagers as goslings. Well, today, Steve, those teenagers are, of course, adults, and many of them, now that we have the availability of email and the internet, they're writing to me.
So as the conflict continues, Jane, how do you feel about your Goslings and the danger that they're in?
So I am very, very terrified. And when I hear that any of my Goslings are out in the eastern region, where they really can't send any photos of themselves, and most of them are not allowed to even have cell phones because it would give away their positions. But, you know, I pray for them. I worry about them terribly.
More information about Jane Olson and her book, World Citizen, Journeys of a Humanitarian, can be found at worldcitizenthebook.com. She was speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. And finally, after a full year, daily strikes on civilian areas of Ukraine have left people numb, saying they barely hear the sirens. Even far from the front lines, locals say everything about life in Ukraine is different. VOA's Heather Murdoch rounds us out.
Sirens have howled across Ukraine almost every day for a year, indicating a strike may land somewhere, and it would be a good idea to go inside, or underground if possible. Most of the time, people ignore the noise. The sirens were on when a missile hit this apartment building in Dnipro, according to local soldiers, but some survivors say they don't remember hearing it. The missile ripped into the building on a holiday in January, killing 45 people. This is Petro Mikolaevich, a Dnipro resident.
When the explosion happens, you do not hear anything. No pop, nothing, just flying glass. You are in shock. You are confused. And while you gather your thoughts, blood pours from you. And then you hear women's screams. Cars explode, and you stand up and do not understand what to do next.
Dnipro is far from the front lines and now home to thousands of displaced families. But it is still often the target of Russian bombs. Locals say a year of war has changed everything about their lives. Here's Katya Ryazanova, Dnipro resident.
What has changed for me personally and for my family is that we have no plans for the future. We don't build them because something terrible can happen at any moment. For me, this is the worst thing. I have no plans, no dreams.
While war rages on in the eastern part of the country, other major cities, like Lviv in the west, have transformed. This hospital has become a national trauma center, accepting patients who have lost limbs in battles across the country. And in Dnipro, which is in central Ukraine, survivors say the grief and the terror of the war reaches them daily, if not the actual battles. Once again, Petro Mikolaevich of Dnipro.
There are women, children. Everyone is covered in blood. You know them all, and you return, and the house is falling, and you realize that you will not see some people anymore. You greeted them yesterday morning, but today they are gone. In 4 hours, how to understand, how to get through it.
Officials say in a year of battle, more than 7,100 civilians have been killed, and more than 40,000 buildings have been destroyed in Ukraine. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Dnipro, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on social media. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.